Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Those of you that are attentive listeners here, that are involved listeners of the Human Technology Podcast, they will have realized that there was one episode missing 2 weeks ago. So without any announcement, I just didn't record, a new episode. And just didn't publish anything. And this was for a good reason. I had planned it for the regular time frame, but I received a call from a client in Japan. Very short term, I had to travel to Tokyo, and instead of being able to record something for you, I was sitting in meetings and kicking off a super interesting and very cool project. And I cannot talk about this because I have an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, and it's all secret what we do there. But a week later, I was in China. And my visit there is about was a conference called EAC 2024. I made a quick research before I recorded this one. What EAC means, probably it's Enmore Automotive Conference. It's not clearly written anywhere, but the company organizing the entire event is called Enmore. I had not been in China for a couple of years. So the last time before was before the pandemic, before the corona pandemic. So it's 5 years ago. And after such a time, you can see the changes. You can see what's new in a country if you haven't been there for such a long time. And there are three things that I realized while I was there. Three things that I realized connected to automotive, to HMI, to my professional area. And one thing is new car brands and new car models. There are cars out there I had not seen before, and brands I had not heard of, or maybe heard of but not seen before on the road, and car models I had not seen. Sometimes the car was passing by and I was asking myself, hey, what car is it? What brand is it? And I've never seen it, never heard it before. And there were brands like Zeekr, like Link, like even Huawei was one of the car, Li Auto, all these brands, they get a certain dominance on the local car market. And it seems to me like the Chinese customers have more and more choice amongst local OEMs, amongst local car makers, and they take this. They take the chance to buy a Chinese car. Particularly if it's about electric vehicles, there, as we all know it from the statistics, the traditional Western, German, European, USA, US American OEMs have a pretty hard standing to get into the market. Second thing connected to electric vehicles, it is easy to see which cars in China are electric and which have a combustion engine. And those with an electric drivetrain, they have a green number plate. So the regular color is blue with white fonts on it. And the green number plates, they indicate with black fonts on it, they indicate an electric car. When I was in China last time, these green number plates Very few. Every now and then you saw one, but not really. Now it feels like at least a third, at least a quarter of all cars I have seen are electric. So this is very subjective. I don't have any objective numbers, any objective figures on this one, but it seems like, or it's obvious, it's absolutely obvious that electric cars are getting more and more prominent and we get more and more visibility on Chinese roads. And so it's the tendency that is happening more or less globally, but it seems like in China there is a very strong pull of the customers of the markets, or very strong push by the industry and the government towards electric vehicles. And the third point I realized the first time I was in China 7, 8 years ago, I was giving a keynote on a conference, and I found that on this conference that the Chinese automotive industry is comparably young and female when I had a look at the attendees. So a serious percentage, a significant percentage of the audience was female, and it was comparably young. So it is still more female than in the than in the Western world, but it's not as young anymore as it was. So it seems like many of these of the people that joined the automotive industry maybe 10 years ago are still there, but there's not too many young people coming after. Maybe I'm wrong on this one, but this was my personal impression when I compare the audiences of this year's, the AIEAC 2024, and the keynote I gave 7 or 8 years ago. The event itself, it was huge, about 30,000 visitors, a huge exhibition. And integrated into that about a dozen different conferences in parallel. I had the impression it is very Chinese, only a low number of non-Chinese people there, and only a low number of non-Chinese exhibitors. So Webasto and Mahle, two German automotive suppliers, they were the exception. But beyond that, hardly any Western companies are presenting there or having a booth there. And also the presenters in the conferences where I was. So in my session, there were, I think, five or six Chinese speakers and two European speakers, myself and a colleague from Renault. Anyway, it seems like the Chinese get it done alone without us. This is the impression I take away from this. So we need to do things in Germany, in Europe, in the Western world if we want to may remain relevant on the Chinese markets. And we all get this from the press. We all read this with the additional fees put on cars. So the US doubles the price of a Chinese car coming onto the market. And the European Union, we try to avoid it. The politicians are talking, are moving further and back, and yeah. So let's wait and see how it comes out. I will very much believe in free trade, but I also believe in fair trade. So we need to find the correct balance in this one. I had a keynote. I was talking about the impact of software-defined vehicles, of automation, and of globalization on HMIs, on human-machine interfaces in cars. And every single of these sub-subjects would have been more than enough for a 60-minute keynote. I had 25 minutes, so I had to rush pretty much through all these things, just grabbing a couple of points, discussing this. Those of you that know my keynotes are aware that I do a lot of storytelling, that make it pretty personal. And Yeah, so it was a pretty squeezed thing, but a very good one. I got very positive feedback. People found it very interesting. I got one a lady, she came to me and said, "So inspiring. Haven't heard anything like this." And if you want to have this experience, little commercial block here, I'm just a call or an email away. If you want to spice up your event with a keynote, me talking about humans and technologies, cars and drivers, the tendencies that we have in the industry, feel free to approach me and we can talk about everything. All right, so what did I take with me from China? I identified three things I would like to talk about here, three focus points. Two of them definitely very China specific, but I think they're all somehow China specific. Things are handled in a different way. Their use cases are different. The way you approach technology, the way you interact with technology is different in China. So, yeah, three points I'm having here. One is artificial intelligence with a focus point on smart cockpit, smart cabin, and generative HMI. Second one, well-being, health, second home, third place philosophy of a car. And the third one is gamification and cuteness of HMIs in the Chinese market. So those are the three things. Let's start with the artificial intelligence with a smart cockpit. Artificial intelligence was ubiquitous on this meeting, as it is on more or less any meeting, any technology-oriented meeting these days. One of the speakers called it artificial stupidity, which I find is also a pretty cool thing to have a look at this. He showed a car with pedals on the passenger side. It was a picture created by an artificial intelligence. Also, the thing, and I will get a little deeper into this a little later, that artificial intelligence is very conservative. It always looks into the past. It takes things that happened in the past and rearranges that, and sometimes with a surprising, good, and inspiring results, but very often it's just blah blah and that's not very innovative that comes. And this is the nature of artificial intelligence. But anyway, smart cockpit. That term was mentioned so often that I have the feeling it could be a buzzword. So everything is a smart cockpit. So if you have a screen in your car, you have a smart cockpit. Now try to find out what does it really mean? What is a smart cockpit? And I was not 100% successful. So I do not have a crystal clear picture of what a smart cockpit is. But I have a couple of points that show the direction that indicate where we are going with this. And the first one here is the end of silo functions in the cockpit. So you have the cluster instrument as one function, then you have the air condition as a second function, and then you have the infotainment as a third function, and they don't really talk to each other. They are different HMIs, they have different ways of getting into it. And the smart cockpit is a philosophy, that is an approach, is a way of seeing vehicle interior that integrates all functions. It integrates all the different sensor data. It integrates the ADAS, the Advanced Driver Assistance Systems. It integrates entertainment and driving functionality. It integrates consumer devices. And with that, we can create new functionalities, we can create new ways of presenting existing functionalities. So we are expanding the traditional cockpit with yeah, the smartness that is in there with the idea of a smart cockpit. And with that, we can create, and I don't have any doubt that this will happen, totally new user experiences and totally new functions in a vehicle. Multimodality is typical for smart cockpits, multi-dimensional interaction, so you have more than one channel to do inputs. You have speech and gesture and touch and buttons, and all is integrated into one whole to control it holistically. But you also have more than one display, and you have a display landscape to create the outputs, to create the information transfer from technology to human. And usually you have two displays today. It's a cluster and a center stack, maybe a head-up display. And there are cockpit architectures that have just one huge display, that have a lower number of displays. There is more than one out there. But the integration of additional output instances is also typical for a smart cockpit. This includes new user experiences, this includes personalization, this includes, as I said, more screens. Next point in smart cockpits discussed was 3D graphics and 3D interactions. We have this today for vehicle exteriors, vehicle interiors. You have these 3D cars rotating on the screen. You can zoom in, you can zoom out, you can select from that. And these applications, by the way, they were the entry point for the gaming industry into automotive. These guys in the gaming industry, they know exactly how to handle all these 3D things, how to optimize this, how to work with limited resources, technical resources, processor power, but to get out of this a smooth, clear, easy to use, flawless 3D animation. And this is used, as I said, for vehicles, but also for the ADAS, for the Advanced Driver Assistance System, functionalities like showing the vehicle environment. And so this 3D aspect is core for smart cockpits. Next one is, and this is where artificial intelligence comes in, is a proactive HMI and proactive functionality. So the car knows who you are, what you want, where you're coming from, and how you will behave on that particular day, because we have cold weather outside. So you will probably use the seat heating, and you will put the air condition to 22 degrees centigrade, and so on and so on and so on. So that knows this, and so the HMI is adapted to you and to what you do in that particular situation. And for me, it's like when I get into my car and we have less than, let's say, 10 degrees centigrade on the outside, then I turn on the seat heating first, then I select my profile in the car, then I move to sports mode, and then I want to listen to Spotify. Now, this is what I do, and I would love my car to show me this one as an interaction string that I just can click yes, 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 this is all I want. And of course, if somebody else drives my car, then he or she will have a different entry scenario into the car. Today, I have to press four different buttons. I have to do four different things to start all these. And yeah, this is not a positive user experience. And we have the smart cockpits, which has predictive elements in it, predictive components based on artificial intelligence, on user recognition. That will create a new user experience and will provide us functionality that go far beyond what we can see today. And last point on the smart cockpit, the adaption to different levels of automation. If we drive on higher levels of automation, we need different kind of information, or we do not need certain information anymore. If I drive myself, I need to know how fast am I. Am I still in the legal area, or am I beyond this? If I drive automatically, if my car detects the speed limit signs and adjusts the speed accordingly, automatically, then I don't need to know the speed anymore. Well, maybe as an information, or maybe just because I want to know, but it's not really necessary anymore. And so we have, we can have a different HMI. We can use the space for different information. And so that this is just one example to show you how the adaption of a cockpit to different automation levels, different levels of automation, could be. If you then have level four, where you can really sit back, relax, then you can use the display for a movie or for an Excel file that you want to work on or whatever you want to do in a car. But you need to adapt the HMI of a cockpit. Second point on artificial intelligence, smart cabin. Basically the same philosophy as in the smart cockpit, in the smart cabin. Highly integrated, highly individualized, but not only for the driver, but also for the passengers. This goes down to the recognition of who is sitting where and who is it. Maybe you bring your own profile into the car with a smartphone, the car detects you and adapts the cabin to you, to your needs, to what you want to do. But it's also a multimodal interaction, basically a full reaction of the car on the wishes, the needs, the dreams of a single user, of a single person. So this is the smart cabin thing. Generative HMI, also an expression that's not 100% clear. It is based on a generative artificial intelligence, and this is what we know from ChatGPT to create texts, from DALL-E to create pictures. There are tools out there that create videos or music. To me, it feels like there is a new one of these every week, so that there's always something brand new that you have to check out and try whether this is supporting you in the right way. And for me, generative human machine interfaces, is more or less the same thing for the development of human machine interfaces. At the CES in January, I saw in the suite of Rightware, which is a developer of an HMI development tool, and I saw a tool there, a plugin, an expansion of their Kanzi suite, which is using generative HMI. He showed me that and said, okay, this is a cluster instrument and I want to have the speed here and I want to have the ADAS there, and in the middle I want to have the media information and I want to have the entire thing heavily 3D and super pinky kind of design. He typed that in, gave little information into the tool, and then he had about half a dozen, maybe eight or nine, different designs that were created by the artificial intelligence. And then he was able to select, okay, this one doesn't look too bad. We take this one. And then he was improving that by prompting it into it. And then he had some good HMI within a couple of minutes. So the general procedure of this is problem definition. You start by defining a problem. I have this device and I want to have it looking like this, and this shall be solved with this one. The second is that you then need to feed information about existing concepts into the algorithm. And there we have the point again that artificial intelligence is a super conservative thing, because if you say, hey, check out all the Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Hi-Fi, Zeekr, Link HMIs that you can find out there, all the algorithm will find on the internet are things that a designer has done 2, 3, or maybe even 4 years ago. So it's always looking into the past. And so, but this is the basic point, and this is what we need to keep in mind if we work with tools like this. It's a super conservative approach that you have. Okay, so you have the problem description, you have the data you feed into your algorithm, and then this algorithm, and this is what it's made for, is creating new concepts, new designs. From my point of view, a good tool, a good way to rework HMR is to create something which needs to be done quickly for maybe a demonstrator. If you want to be really innovative, if you want to really look forward, as I see AI generative HMI today, it doesn't work that well. I may be proved wrong in a few months or in a year or two from now that these things will change. But from my today's point of view, I feel like very good tool for certain applications, but if you want to be groundbreaking, really creative, super innovative, you will need to think yourself and create something by yourself. All right, so far on the artificial intelligence part of what I heard on the EAC 2024. Another block was on health and well-being, so physical health. First of all, right? That's the classical idea of health, like physical comfort, light, sound, ergonomics, the classical ergonomic design of a vehicle interior. How do I sit? Can I reach everything? Can I see everything? How does my back feel in the seat? Can I reach the pedals with my feet? So this is all the classical idea of health. And there are, I had a rental car lately with a very poor seat, and it took this car just about 90 to 120 minutes to create me serious back pain. There must have been something wrong with the ergonomics, at least for me, for my body. And this was not very well done, and I had a health problem based on the car. And also inclusive design. So we have people with handicaps and people that have special needs. And also we need to think about how can we adapt ergonomics to this user group. Second point here was living in harmony with nature, which means access to nature, biodiversity, natural solutions, nature-based products. All this seems to be a certain need in the user groups, and has a certain focus. And then at the end, it's the mental health, which is analog experiences versus digital experience. And we are all analog beings. We are analog beings living in an analog world. And the digital world is breaking into this and endangering our inner health and our physical health. So we are having cognitive problems, cognitive distortions due to all the digital experiences that we have. On the other side, of course, all the digital world, the digital communication and what we are doing here. I mean, I'm recording this podcast on my MacBook and I'm publishing this on the internet. And you can listen to it on your smartphone with an app on it. It's all digital and it's good. It's great. We have to keep in mind that we are analog beings and that our mental health is connected closely to a certain amount of analog experiences. And solutions presented there on the conference were health profiles, personal profiles, to create them, to put them on your smartphone. And you carry them with you into the vehicle and then have them available in the vehicle. And you can have predictive measures in the car so that the seat gets into a certain position if the profile shows you that you have a sensitive back, so that certain seat positions are avoided, that maybe tells you, hey, stop now and make a little walk around the car, or have a little yoga session, or do some meditation in the car. So all these are predictive measures in the car. At the end, the car will be, if we're consequently on this one, turning into a third place. The idea of the third place came up 15, almost 20 years ago. I read a book of a guy called, I think, Christian Mikuna. And he was writing about this and saying, hey, we have the first place, which is our home, and we have the second place, which is our office. Now we have a third place, which is also a place we spend time in and want to spend quality time in. And at that time, he was thinking about shopping malls and coffee shops and places like this where you go and where you spend time. The automotive industry picked up the idea quickly and said, okay, the car is the third space or the third place. This is where you can be. Yeah, where you have an individualized personal shell, where you have a protective shell around you, but also an instrument to present yourself to the rest of the world. And so this is the idea. And so basically, I think we have four places. So we have the home, we have the office, we have the shopping mall, coffee shop area, and then we have the car. What is first, second, third, fourth place of this one is a different discussion. At the end, we spend time in cars. We are there. We are beings. We expand our being into a vehicle, particularly if we don't drive that much anymore. And so the environment needs to, the interior of the car, our environment in a car needs to take this into account. Okay, final point. Target group of young women. They are detected in China at the moment, and there was an old man on stage explaining me what young Chinese women want, and I thought this pretty strange because that is a typical example of mansplaining. Anyway, it seems like in China, young women are a new target group, and there are cars out there like the Aura Cat, for example, which looks like a Volkswagen Beetle. Electric car is targeting exactly this user group. From the colors, from the functions in the vehicle, from any aspect that you have in this car, it is targeting towards this user group. And the presenter showed an HMI solution which looked like a childish cartoon style. It was a beautiful, I don't know, cutie kind of living room with a super cute cat in this. And this cat was jumping around and doing things. And there was a cute clock on the wall. And so everything super cute, pinky, turquoise kind of color sad. And yeah, so there was this little cat or a dog as an avatar in the HMI. And I don't know if Chinese young women really want to have this. I have no idea of the user group. I don't hardly know any, or not at all, any young Chinese women. So I cannot say if this is really relevant or if this is some kind of old man fantasy of how young girls may be. But, and this is the core point, this is what I took away from it, we need to know our user group exactly. If we want to design technology, we need to know everything about our user group to make it a perfect fit, to create real value out of what we do and out of technology. And for me, this just was an interesting takeaway and a nice example of this one, how it may work or may not work. All right, so that was it, my podcast episode about the EAC 2024, which happened in China, in Suzhou, about an hour and a half driving time from Shanghai. I talked about three things: artificial intelligence with a focus point, smart cockpits, smart cabins, and generative HMI. I talked about well-being, health, the car as a third place or a second home. And I talked about gamification and cuteness in the HMI for a specific user group. If you have questions, if you would like me to talk about a certain aspect of your working life, of your thoughts, of what you see in the industry, if you want to hear my opinion on whatever, let me know. Send me an email, write me a mail to podcast@beyond-hmi.de or write me in a LinkedIn message. You will find me there. And then let me know. I want to make this fit to your things. I want to answer your questions if I can. And yeah, let me know about your ideas, your thoughts, and what you would like to hear from me. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.